You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a Quarantine Anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time To Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Kristen Higgins is the author of Pack Up the Moon. She's also the New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of more than 20 novels, which have been translated into more than 24 languages and have sold millions of copies worldwide. Her two most recent novels were each selected as People Magazine's Pick of the Week. Her books have received many awards and accolades, and she is a six-time nominee for the Kirkus Prize for Best Work of Fiction. Kristen is also a co-host of the Crappy Friends podcast, which discusses the often complex dynamics of female friendships with her friend and fellow writer Joss Day. Higgins lives in Connecticut with her family. Welcome, Kristen. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Pack Up the Moon and a million other things.
Oh, it's so nice to be here.
So nice to have you. Well, let's start with your most recent book. Can you please tell listeners what Pack Up the Moon is about?
Pack Up the Moon is the story of how to be married, how to take care of your spouse, how to prepare for death. It's the story of Lauren and Josh Park, newlywed couple. They have everything going for them. Josh is this sort of super genius, on the spectrum medical device engineer, and he lives this very like closed in life. He works for himself. He has like three people that he loves in the world. And then he meets Lauren, who's the complete opposite. She's bubbly and outgoing, and they fall in love and they get married, and they're both just kind of blown away by how great life has been to them. And then about a year after their wedding, they discover that she has a terminal disease, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, 12 syllables of doom, they call it. And it's kind of about, what do you do with the rest of your time? How do you look after the person you love the best? And then how do you get through that time after they're gone? So in a way, it's Joshua's story more than Lauren's, because Josh is living in the present. And what Lauren has done to kind of help him through this year, because he is so reliant on her for, you know, this new life that they had. She leaves him a letter for every month of his first year of widowhood, and she gives him a job in each letter to kind of lure him out into the world and outside of his comfort zone, and try to kind of help him step back into life.
And it really was amazing in the book, the relief that he felt when he started, when he realized, when her friend Amanda brought over the letters, and he realized that even though she was gone, he would still be hearing her voice from beyond, right? And that he had something to do, and that she wasn't complete, like there would still be dribs and drabs of her throughout, which, that he could cling to, which is so important. Because, you know, even in the book, you talked about how the grammar has to change, right? She isn't my wife. She was my wife. And how you have to kind of adjust to that. And I feel like this idea of the letters sort of, you know, almost softened the blow a little and made me personally be like, I totally need to do this. Like, everybody should do this for the people that they love. Like, when am I going to do this? I don't know. I'm going to have to put it in my calendar, like write letters, post-mortem, you know, whatever. Anyway, but it's so true. The comfort that can provide.
And in a way, you know, Lauren is torn about it, because she, on the one hand, she thinks he's definitely going to need me more than ever after I'm dead, you know, so it's this conundrum of how to look after him. On the other, she thinks, am I just prolonging his grief by popping in every month? And of course, in Josh's mind, no, this is his lifeline. But yeah, I mean, I think about my own death all the time. Everybody has a hobby. The other day, when my son was still home for the summer, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm just updating my funeral instructions. He's like, as one does, you know. And that's a document that I've had since I was like 23. Because, you know, I've had some profound losses, like every human. My dad died in a car accident, hit by a drunk driver. And, you know, life changes in that instant. And then a few years later, I lost a baby. So I know that feeling of, I will never be happy again. Like, I don't even remember what happiness is when you lose something. Your life changes so profoundly. And there's this question of, like, you know, how am I going to get through all these days? You know, there's so many days to get through. And then I think at some point, you know, you make that choice of, how are you going to be for the rest of your life? You know, are you going to be a constant open wound? And the answer is, you know, yeah, sometimes, absolutely. You don't get over people, you know, and you just learn to carry their memory and their loss more easily and with more strength, maybe. So this is what Lauren is trying to do for Josh. And Josh is a great person. You know, he's very loving. He's a little bit different because he has, you know, difficulty reading people, and, you know, because he works alone and he has that little tiny circle. Lauren knows, you know, she's going to need to push him out of it and find more people for him. And so a lot of her tasks in these letters are just getting him out into the world. The first one is go grocery shopping. And he's so happy that she knows, like she says something like, if I'm correct, you know, you haven't showered in days, you have this stubbly little beard that an eighth grader would grow, your vegetables are melting into one big vegetable, you know? So, and he's like, yes, you're right, buddy, you know? It's like, she's here. And he's so elated to go out and do something for her to make her happy. And then the jobs kind of progress in import throughout the book. And we also learn a lot about Lauren, because her story is told backwards. The last time we hear from her is the first chapter of the book. She's about a week away from dying. And she knows things are changing. She can feel it getting closer. And IPF is a lung disease, so it can be very erratic. Like, you can have good days, and then you can have days when you need to be rushed to the hospital. But she tells her story from that day backwards, so that by the time her story is done, we learn how she's met Josh and the kind of impact that meeting him has had on her. So both their stories end on this note of hope for the future and excitement for the future. And that's kind of like, you know, gate into a new phase of life.
Wow. Well, so many things. First of all, with the errand to the grocery store, I thought it was so moving how you had him forget his wallet and that the clerk let him, you know, realized that she, you know, Lauren had passed away and was like, no, don't even worry about it. And he was, it's like he hadn't even, you know, because in the midst of grief, you forget all the normal things, right? You can only do so much. And remembering a wallet sometimes seems like the hurdle, right? Like, you know, so I just love that detail. In fact, the types of details that you have everywhere, which are so real, right? And so relatable and so just on point. And second to all of your losses, which I had known about before, but still, I'm just so sorry. I know it was a while ago, it doesn't matter. And I'm just terribly sorry. To your point about the funeral, I too have a document. I also think about this all the time. I think about my death constantly. It's terrible. But actually I ran into a girlfriend recently and I always think about it in terms of like the funeral and all of that and like the aftermath, but she worries about it in terms of like who will find her and how. And I had not worried about that yet. But since our conversation, now I worry about that too.
I know, so much to think about. So much,
right, so much to think about. Anyway, so I totally get that. And I get the, just once you've had loss, you know, it's so present that you can't sort of get past it. But yeah. But in that it can improve your life too. So it's like all of these things.
I mean, you don't want to reduce it to I'm a better person for having loved and lost, because it's so much more complicated than that. You know, you can't say, at one point, Lauren says, you know, I'm not going to be an idiot and say that I'm glad that I have this terminal disease, but it is part of my life and I love my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's always that sort of, you don't want to glamorize dying in a young person. I think, you know, it can go very maudlin and sanctimonious very quickly. So I worked really hard to keep Lauren normal and to have her meltdowns. She's not a saint. She's not all knowing, but like the author, she loses her dad at a young age and it kind of introduces her into this world of adulthood. Because I think that one of the biggest hurdles in becoming an adult when you're in your, you know, teens and 20s is, you know, for a lot of people, their first loss comes in early adulthood. And whether it's like a beloved grandparent or, you know, a parent or, you know, a classmate driving wildly or something like that. And it really shapes the adult that you become. It really doesn't, you know, and grief and loss is something that every human experiences. And grieving is love. You know, it's like the purest form of love in a way, because you knew how lucky you were. And, you know, a friend of mine just lost her dad. And she's like, I miss him so much. And I said, he deserves that. You know, that's a sign of your love. That's because he was a great dad. And, you know, you don't need to shy away from it or bait up like so many of us Americans try to do.
How old were you when you lost your dad?
I was 23.
Oh,
college, yeah.
Can I just read from you wrote this beautiful essay for Moms Don't Have Time to Write called Preparing for Widowhood. We're the happiest couple I know, despite the fact that I've written his eulogy four times. You wrote it in April and it's so beautiful. We'll include the link in this show description for this, but can I just read like the couple opening paragraphs? Because it's so good. You wrote, my father died 3 years before my wedding, killed by a drunk driver while stopped at a red light. It was a random, preventable, horrible death. Until then, my life had been just fine. But suddenly, Dad was gone and everything changed. My mom fell apart. I became the de facto head of the family, the older daughter, the one who lived nearby. My sister was still in college, utterly heartbroken, and my brother distanced himself from the rest of us, cloaking himself and his life out of state and his then fiance's family. I handled everything from my father's business to the court case against the drunk driver to taking care of my mom. I became a true adult, while my mom became a ghost, so wrecked by grief, she was lost in it. I felt like I was lost. I felt like I lost both parents the day my father died. And then I got married.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, grown-ups. The Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. So sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. And then you said we were young and happy and healthy, and I immediately started preparing for young widowhood. Weird? Sure. Oh, so moving.
That's my paradigm, sadly, you know, is looking at my mom, who was 47 when my dad died, you know, and, you know, my husband's a firefighter, so that doesn't help. And, you know, if he's late for work, I turn on the news and start looking for the, you know, the fire where he might be, or, you know, the horrible wreck. He learned long ago not to come home late without telling me, because the first time he did, I was certain, like, there is no reason, we had young children at the time, there's no reason he wouldn't call to say, I'm stuck on a call or something like that. And by the time he got home, I was so tightly wound. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm writing your eulogy. And I just burst out crying. You know, I'm so sorry. But yeah, you know, I think that grief is such a beautiful emotion, because it is such a representation of love. But also, like, as a writer, it's so complex. And it's so layered, you know, there's all those anger, denial, you know, bargaining pieces of it. But also it's not like, okay, it's been 6 months, I should be feeling better now. It's not a straight line. And it'll turn around and smack you when you least expect it, sometimes decades later, you know. And yet again, it's something that we all have to deal with, we all carry. And so I wanted to write this book. I was on the beach here on Cape Cod in February a couple of years ago, and it was bitter, bitter cold, and the wind was, you know, howling, and I was wearing like a parka and sweatshirts, and I was freezing cold, like 6 degrees out. And my dog and I were there, and we see this guy standing at the edge of the water. He's wearing like a windbreaker because, you know, we're Yankees, right? We don't like to admit there's weather. And didn't have a hat on. I was like, you know, that little kid in Christmas Story, you know, in his snowsuit. And there was this guy, you know, just staring out at the ocean and not moving and not affected by the weather and the wind. And I thought to myself, he looks like the loneliest man in the world.
Oh.
And I want to write his story and I want to save him, you know. So I decided to write about a young widower who has to. I've done this before. I've written widows and widowers. You know, I've written, this is my 21st book, but I've never walked a person through that immediate time. And also with the knowledge that your spouse would die, you know, facing that. And one of the reasons I did that was because I like to write about difficult subjects, you know, things that we tend to look away from sometimes, whether it's one of my books dealt with body image and weight, and women and how hard it is for us to come to like accept ourselves when we're in a society that, you know, worships bodily perfection and also food, right? I wrote a book about...
Which book was that?
This was Good Luck With That. It was...
Good Luck With That. All right, I'm ordering that now.
It features the three women who met at weight loss camp as teenagers and their different journeys. One of them dies of complications related to obesity in the early chapters. And then with this book, you know, when you see a young person with a terminal disease, what do you say? You know, and people say a lot of dumb things, which was really fun to write about, you know, like, oh my God, my uncle had that and it was horrible. And, you know, he died. He didn't even look human at the end, you know, or like, you know, heaven will have another angel. And we don't like to just be with this very difficult, sad situation. And, you know, as someone who has planned her own death many, many times, I think if I did have a terminal disease, you know, how would I want to be, what would I want to leave for my family? What kind of memories, you know, how could I work that best? And Lauren gets to do that. You know, she knows she doesn't know when she'll die, but she knows it's not going to be, you know, she's not going to be too old. And, you know, that there's like a purity of having to come face to face with that. Like you're all stripped away and you have to look at, okay, so I have a few years, you know, and what am I going to do? And it's hard. And it's, you know, sometimes heartbreaking, but she teaches us, the author included, like how to get through it, how to do it well with your loved ones first in your mind. And I, you know, I always say like my books make you laugh, they make you cry, they make you laugh again. This one's like makes you laugh, makes you cry harder, then makes you laugh again.
Yeah. Let's go back to the 21 books. I mean, you are the only author, by the way, who has a downloadable PDF link of all your book titles because there are so many, which as someone learning about you, that was very helpful. But that's, I mean, it's amazing to even keep track of so many books. How did you start writing novels? Like, when did you know this is what you were sort of meant to do?
I didn't know. I never thought about being a writer. I certainly never thought about being a writer for a living, you know, as a career, because it's not the kind of career you can say, like, I think I'll be a novelist, you know? I mean, you can be a hobby novelist, you can plan for that, but to have it be your day job. So my kids were little. I was a stay-at-home mom. My husband was working the two jobs that most firefighters work. And my son was in nursery school, and I kind of did the math and thought, okay, I have like 3 more years before he, the younger child, will be in full-day school. And once he starts full-day school, I'm going to have to contribute somehow to the family finances. And I wanted to stay home. So I was like, well, what could I do? I have very few life skills. I could clean a house, which I did. I thought, like, well, I'm a fast typist. But I also thought, well, Alex, I read a lot, right? So I could write a book. How hard could it be, right, Sibby?
Piece of cake. I mean, come on.
No. So I thought, I've read thousands of books. I've always loved romantic comedy. And so I'll write that because everybody likes that, right? So I wanted to write about regular people, not like, you know, super billionaires or famous people. That's not in my wheelhouse. And so I wrote a romantic comedy about, you know, people who could be like your friend or your sister, you know, the guy you know from high school. And I gave myself like 3 years to get it published, and I did get a contract. And then I got another contract, and, you know, another and another. And at some point I looked back and said, like, wow, I've been writing for 15 years. I've been published now for 15 years and writing for like 18, which is a generation, you know, it's kind of crazy. My daughter remembers the time before I was a writer. My son does not, you know, he was younger. Yeah, it worked out shockingly well. I think that there's a couple things about being an author. Your success is not up to you. You could write the best book in the world and it could flop. You could write the best book in the world and sell 100 copies. There's a lot of luck in publishing. And there's something they call it right book, right time. And at the time I had the right book at the right time, it was a word of mouth hit. And my publisher kept offering me contracts. I think my third book was my first bestseller. And I remember, you know, my editor telling me that. I'm like, oh, there must be a mistake. <You know? laughs> I think they counted wrong, you know. So you can never really expect success. And of course, your popularity can wane and rise. But I've been really lucky. And here's a secret. I hate writing books for a living, you know.
What?
80% of the time, it's misery and self-doubt. And you think, like, I can't believe I have 300 pages to go before this thing is even, like, pretending to be a first draft. That 20% of the time, I love so much. You know, when your book finally takes shape and the characters are three-dimensional and they know what they're doing and thinking and how to take on their problems and what to say, it's so rewarding, but it takes a while for me to get there.
Wow. Well, you know, you started this conversation with this horrible, you know, how do I get through all the days feeling, which is just, you know, relatable, sadly, to so many. And look at the way you've gotten through the days. I mean, by helping so many other people get through their days, it's really amazing. And the way you write about grief and friendship and, you know, your podcast and, you know, how you're helping friendships with crappy friends and everything. I mean, it's really amazing. So I just think it's awesome. So what is your next book? And then what advice would you have for aspiring authors?
Okay, so my next book is called Out of the Clear Blue Sky. I think it will be another summer release. And it's set here on beautiful Cape Cod. And it's about a woman who learns the night before her only child's high school graduation that her husband is going to leave her at the end of the summer when her kid goes to Montana, 2,000 miles away, to go to college. And so, like, in the space of a night, her whole future kind of crumbles. And she goes a little crazy. She becomes kind of obsessed with her husband and his new wife, which is fun, not in a healthy, benign way, but in a way like, how can I mess up their lives without breaking the law? And it's kind of a book about, you know, that midlife crisis that women have when their babies go to college. And you think, like, gosh, for 18 years or 25 years or however long it is. I know you have 4 kids, right, Zivi?
I do.
So, you know, by the time the last one goes to school, you will have been mothering for so long. And you think, like, well, what am I now? You know, if I don't have to pick up a kid or go to a track meet or piano lessons or something like that, how do I fill my time? And then when Lily's husband leaves her, she's, you know, doubly reeling. So that's a much funnier, lighter book than Pack Up the Moon, which was, you know, a very emotional book. And then my advice for new writers is twofold. It's believe in yourself, because every writer was unpublished once. That is the universal truth of writers. So whether it was Stephen King, who almost became like head janitor instead of author, or Nora Roberts, or, you know, Jasmine Guillory, you know, all these wonderful authors, they were unpublished once and they got rejected numerous times, I'm sure. So you have to believe in yourself and you have to develop a thick skin, because the industry is very tough. On the other hand, you also have to get over yourself, because you are not this diamond dropped into the world, you know, meant to change the industry and be heralded. You know, your readers will decide if that's true, not you. So you need to work really, really hard, compare yourself to the best authors in your genre, study them, learn from them, and keep trying to be better. You know, I think that that's one of the reasons that I've been successful, is because I am so hard on my own books. That whole 80% of hating them gets me to that 20% of, I think I know what I'm doing here. The book is really clicking along.
Wow. I love that. I've been trying to remember what you said about all those years of being a mom, and then right, they're finally out of the house. There was another book I read recently where there were a bunch of women in an old, like in a nursing home. And whenever 4 o'clock or 3:30 would come around, there would be this sense of, you know, we should be somewhere for pickup and everything. And it just like didn't go away ever.
Yeah,
so I don't know. That sort of made me think of that. Anyway, well, Kristen, I'm so glad to have met you. As you've been talking, you know, when you said you don't want to romanticize grief or what it does to you, it's like, I don't want to do that either. But I feel like when you've gone through loss and can talk about it and relate to people, it's almost like, you know, you can still see, like without loss, you still have like the beautiful trees, right? But with the loss, you get to see down into like the root structure further and further in. So it's just like the tree still stays the same, but you have a new appreciation for all of it and a deeper understanding of it. So I don't know.
Beautifully said.
That's what I came up with. Okay. Anyway. Thank you so much for coming on Moms No Time to Read Books. Thank you for Pack Up the Moon. Thank you for writing for Moms No Time to Write. And I hope we can stay in touch and meet in person sometime.
Me too. Thank you so much, Sibby.
All right. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.